welcome back to the Infus Podcast. This is our 1 year anniversary episode.
No. Just get an echo machine.
I know.
Echo.
At some point. Echo. We may have one of those. All right. Hey, this is episode 53.
Can we do a car commercial then at that point?
Maybe. This is episode
53.
This nonsense has been going on for an entire year.
This episode is brought to you by Fifth Third Bank. Fifth Third, 5-3.
Because it's nonsense? Anyway. You know, I know you weren't here for
Happy birthday, Infamous Podcast.
Anyway, I know you weren't here for the first episode, but you were here for the second episode. And,
yeah, I was.
You know, you were here for, number 7. And then you took over around, 11.
I don't know.
Maybe 12. But anyway.
I keep asking myself, why?
Because you like doing it. It's fun. We enjoy ourselves.
Every day I quit.
Every day you do. So. But no, it's been fun. I know you're joking when you quit, but we've done some cool stuff. We've got to talk to some cool people. If you listened to our bonus episode from a couple weeks ago, I'm going to be at the Ohio Toy and Comic Show this weekend, but you have to work, so you won't be there. But for this episode, I thought we would do something different and talk about Star Wars.
We're not going to talk about Game of Thrones?
Oh, no, we're totally going to talk about Game of Thrones. No, I was joking, because we tend to talk about Star Wars a lot.
What?
Because it's awesome. I'm wearing my R2-D2 shirt right now.
Nerd.
I know. This is what I wore to work.
Okay.
Yeah, so shorts and an R2-D2 t-shirt. It's awesome.
At my job, we wear a uniform.
Yep. All right, so for some news bites, we're going to talk about Game of Thrones Season 7 news. We're going to talk about the 2016 Emmy nominations. There's something interesting about Game of Thrones Season 7 with that. One of our favorite toy collecting websites is in its death rattle. And then we're going to share some Star Wars Celebration news.
Took long enough.
Yeah, no kidding. We're going to talk about Frank Cho versus Greg Rucka in some Wonder Woman controversy. And then we're going to talk about Stranger Things.
Yes.
Which we have both watched the entire series.
Mm-hmm.
I think my favorite thing in our going back and forth this week about this is, you mean I finished a series before you? Mm-hmm. That was the best text I think I've gotten from you in a long time.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So, all right.
I forgot it was on.
I mean,
and then I was off on Friday and I was like, wait a minute. And I'm like, they had put the banner up and I'm like, oh yeah, that premiered today.
It was only 8 hours. So, all right. So
it was like a day of work. That's up better.
Yeah. Well, anyway. All right. So first things first, Game of Thrones, HBO officially announced that it's a summer return for summer 2017 and that season 7 will be 7 episodes. So nothing that we didn't know. It's just confirmed. Now, interesting.
You're not outraged. You're not going to throw a chair out the window.
No,
a lot of people are.
So they're
raising a fuss.
They're pushing it back so that it can be winter where they're shooting.
Right.
Which, you know what? I'm all for. I trust.
It's cheaper to film it.
Yeah.
Film a winter than it is to CG a winter kind of thing.
They want the grayer skies and things like that. You know, I trust these guys. They haven't let us down yet.
Right.
You know, so if we get it in, say, June instead of April, I mean, really, what's the big deal?
Not that big of a deal.
My one thing I am curious about is how that is going to affect the HBO schedule. So, you know, like Ballers just started, which is the Rock show. And let's just assume for shits and giggles it gets picked up.
Right.
Will they move that into the Game of Thrones slot and air that and then have Game of Thrones start later because of that? So, I don't know. It'll definitely interest
me. If it was me, if I was running HBO programming that, mm-hmm. I would run the previous season up to the premiere.
Well, so here's the thing, though, is they do that with the app.
Right.
So, on HBO Now, because there were 50 episodes before this season started, and they did 50 Days of Thrones. And, you know, sure, it was like, hey, today watch episode one. Today watch episode two.
Well, it's
two,
just like when they do when the new season comes, there's the HBO free preview weekend and you can watch the whole season in one day.
Right, right.
And that. So. But I'm like, you know, if you don't have anything to fill the time, just fill the time with the previous season because people will still watch it.
Yeah. Maybe they start Westworld beginning of the year.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
And run Westworld right up into the beginning of this. So. Yeah. I mean, they definitely have shows that they can put out there. So
that's the thing is like you just shift things around.
Curb Your Enthusiasm is apparently coming back for another season at some point. Like Larry David said, he wanted to do another one, so maybe you do that. All right. So then we're gonna talk about the Emmys, but real quick. So since Game of Thrones is airing so late in the year, they are not going to be eligible for the 2017 Emmy Awards.
Okay.
So there won't be any Game of Thrones nominations for the 2017 Emmys, which kind of sucks, but they have more than made up for it this year.
Yeah.
With, 23 you said?
23. They had the most nominations out of all the shows that were nominated.
So, no lead actor from Game of Thrones, which I found very strange.
Is there any lead actors on Game of Thrones?
And so this is the thing where I've always considered, even from the very beginning, Peter Dinklage to be the main character of the show.
And I don't think so.
And yeah, I know. And it's completely, I mean, that's part of like, it's up for interpretation.
Right.
You know, so he did get nominated, but you know,
he's a supporting actor. Kit Harington's a supporting actor. The three ladies that were nominated
were all supporting actors.
They're all supporting actresses.
So
I don't think that there is a lead on that show. I don't think there's ever been a
It's definitely
lead
an
on
ensemble. It's I don't know. And for me, it's just always like, I don't know, because I like Tyrion a lot. Well, not necessarily my favorite character. I think Maisie Williams.
And his name is the first in the cast list and all
and
that stuff.
And part of that's alphabetical. And
it's also one of those things where I think that the show itself and the people on the show probably have a say in, you know, how they're picked for nominations. Because I would think that, like, most of those people, they work together all the time. It's like, none of us are the star. No. We're all, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of ego on
that
show.
So there's like the five, right?
Yeah.
So Peter Dinklage, Nico Costa, how do you say his last name?
Nicolaj
Costa.
Yeah.
Kit Harington, Lena Headey, or not Lena Headey.
Lena Headey.
And Emilia Clarke.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Emilia,
So they all got like big pay raises.
Yeah.
So like they're like the five like main characters, which makes sense, you know. So that's kind of where I also get that from, is just kind of looking at Peter Dinklage that way. But I got to say, this is like a really strong year.
Yeah.
So in the lead actor category, we'll just kind of run through some of these.
Sure. Yeah.
You have Kyle Chandler for Bloodline, which is an awesome Netflix show
if you haven't watched it.
Yet. It's about a Florida family and murder and intrigue.
It kind of like reminds me, like the previews I've seen, it kind of reminds me of Dallas without all the 80s schmuck.
It's Dallas without the outrageous wealth.
Yeah, there you go.
But better acting.
Right.
Linda Cardellini's in it, which is, she's pretty cool. I like her character in there. Rami Malek got nominated for Mr. Robot, which is totally deserved. You know, if I had to say, hey, what are my top three or four TV shows from last year, like Mr. Robot's in the top one or two.
Okay.
Bob Odenkirk from Better Call Saul. I haven't seen Better Call Saul yet at all. So
I need to watch the second season. The first season was good, and Odenkirk sells that character.
Yeah.
Even though he's not Saul yet on the show. So
And then Matthew Rhys from The Americans, which you watch.
Yeah.
And it's on my Amazon list to start.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Him and Kerry Russell because you know, they're playing their main characters, plus they're playing, like, at times, three or four other characters.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because, I mean, they're Russian spies, so they have to...
So kind of like Alias when Jennifer Garner played a whole bunch of characters. Yeah.
The makeup is good enough that you believe they look different.
Cool.
But you still know it's them.
Yeah, I definitely... It's on my to-watch list.
Yeah.
Kind of Stranger Things put a wrench in some of the stuff I was going to start this week.
Oh, okay.
So Matthew Rhys, and then you have Liev Schreiber for Ray Donovan.
I just like him, so.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you remember it was RKO?
He could actually come back and play Sabretooth.
And I would be all right with that.
Hell yeah.
He was in, what was it, RKO 241 or whatever, the story where he played Orson Welles. It was a story of the making of Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
It was an HBO original.
Oh, okay.
Oh, he was awesome in that.
I've never seen that.
And then closing out the lead actor is you have Kevin Spacey in House of Cards.
Well, sure. Yeah.
Which season three was all set up for this particular season.
And I haven't watched it yet.
But man, did he come to play.
Yeah.
And you know, so did Robin Wright, who she's also nominated for lead actress. You have Claire Danes for Homeland. I haven't watched Homeland in a couple years.
Well, they lost me after they killed
when they killed Brody off.
I thought the show was about him.
So did I, because it's kind of what it was. And so I watched the season after that, and I tapped out. I was like, this is just not good. But apparently it's gotten better.
Okay.
And then you have Viola Davis for How to Get Away with Murder, which I believe is an ABC show.
I think so, yeah. CBS or ABC.
And then, how do you say her name?
Who?
The girl, the woman from Empire.
Lupita?
No. T-A-R-A-J-R.
Oh, what?
Tiara, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Tiara P. Henson for Empire. She's
the one that used to be on Person of Interest.
Yeah.
Hold on, I'm looking.
And then you have
Taraji,
whatever. Yeah. But sure I don't know how to pronounce her name, but she's awesome on Empire. The couple episodes of that I've watched. I think she fully deserves it. She carries a lot of that show.
Right.
Especially the little bit of it I've watched. You have Carrie Russell for The Americans. And then you have Tatiana.
Oh, Masalani.
Masalani, thank you. From Orphan Black, which, you know, honestly, if someone deserves an Emmy nomination...
She plays multiple characters,
and I'm
gonna be
honest,
too.
I don't like Orphan Black. I tapped out 8 episodes into the first season.
Right.
But, like, you have to respect the job she does playing so many different characters with minor aesthetic changes to her look.
Right, yeah. So,
but yeah. Okay, so then lead actor in a limited series, you have Bryan Cranston in All the Way, where he played LBJ.
Right.
Benedict Cumberbatch for Sherlock and the Abominable Bride, which I wasn't a huge fan of that particular Sherlock episode. I kind of feel like they were all so busy doing other things that they were all really distracted while they were making it.
Oh, like they were filming other movies and that?
Yeah. But yeah, so... and then you have Idris Elba for Luther. And then you have Cuba Gooding Jr. for O.J.
I bet he wins it. I mean...
You know, the little bit of that. So, like, we're going to watch that. Like, the wife and I have, like... Yeah, we got to watch this.
I mean, it looks cool. And, you know, I mean, to see the behind the scenes of what was going on.
Yeah.
During that period of time. Because, I mean, you know, we're old enough that we remember that.
I remember watching it on TV, the whole Bronco chase and everything.
Right.
So, Tom Hiddleston for The Night Manager. This is one where I think it's just a big movie star deciding to do a TV show, and they're going to reward him for coming down to television.
Yeah.
So, because the little bit I saw of that, I was like, yeah, I have no interest in watching this. And then Courtney B. Vance for The People versus O.J. Simpson, where he played Chris Darden.
Oh, is that who he plays? Yeah.
Or okay. Was he Chris Darden, or was he...
I forget the other guy's name.
If the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. I can think of the guy they make fun of him with on Seinfeld, but you know what I'm talking about. All right, so then lead actress in the limited series, Kirsten Dunst in Fargo. I hope she wins.
Yeah.
Are you... Have you watched any of Fargo? No. Did you watch season one?
No. Okay. Not at all.
Season one of Fargo is fantastic. Yeah. Martin Freeman is great. You know, the story is great. Season two, like, makes season one look like little kids playing a play in their backyard on top of a picnic table.
All right.
She was awesome in it. I loved her character, her arc. Felicity Huffman in American Crime. I'm not 100% sure what that show is.
It's on ABC.
Okay.
And that.
And then you have Audra McDonald in Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. I'm assuming this is like a PBS thing.
I have no idea.
And then you have Sarah Paulson, who was Marsha Clark in The People versus O.J. Simpson. You have Lily Tyler for American Crime.
Yeah.
And then you have Kerry Washington for Confirmation, which was the Anita Hill story.
Oh, okay.
So HBO movie, which was really, really good. All right. So then lead actor in comedy. Like, I think this is probably one of the... What?
You're going to go through
the whole list? No, I'm not going to go through the whole list. I'm gonna do the actors, and then we'll do like the two different series. Like, you know, we won't go further than that. But for the comedies, you had Anthony Anderson in Blackish, which Anthony Anderson, ever since he was on The Shield, has been a favorite of mine.
Yeah.
When he played the, you know, the one-niner gang leader, whatever. And he's great on Blackish.
I thought he was your favorite from Agent Cody Banks.
Did like him in Agent Cody Banks. I'm not going to lie. I mean, it was him and Frankie Muniz, man. I totally watched that. Aziz Ansari in Master of None, which is
a great
Netflix show. I that one kind of, for me, came from out of nowhere because I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about him in the lead. And I think it's coming back for a second season. If it's not, I'm going to be really disappointed.
I think it'll be back.
So I loved it. And I love their trip to Nashville with the with the girl. That was great. Will Forte in Last Man on Earth. He is fantastic in that show.
Never watched that.
It's really funny. It's really dark. It's a really dark comedy.
Yeah.
William H. Macy in Shameless. He's been, you know, putting in the work on that show for like 8 seasons now.
It's William H. Macy. Yeah. I mean,
You have Thomas Middleditch for Silicon Valley, which, you know, is a great, great comedy. HBO. Yeah. It's about, you know, a startup in Silicon Valley. It's a lot of fun. You have Jeffrey Tambor again for Transparent, which is, I think so far the first Amazon one we've seen.
Which last year was nominated.
I think, did he win?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it won for overall. All right, then lead actress in comedy, you have Julia Louis-Dreyfus for Veep. If anybody doesn't deserve to be on this list, I feel like at this point it's her for that character.
Oh, yeah?
Like, that show stopped being funny like 2 seasons ago. And again, that's my opinion. If you like the show, awesome. You have Ellie Kemper for Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. The first season, that was really kind of uneven, and I haven't watched the second season yet.
Okay.
You have Tracy Ellis Ross for Blackish, who I kind of hope she wins because she's awesome on that show.
Yeah.
Laurie Metcalf for Getting On. Amy Schumer for Inside Amy Schumer. And then Lily Tomlin for Frankie and Grace, the Netflix show with her and Jane Fonda.
Yeah.
So... you know, again, these are all really strong categories, and this year they've done a good job of, you know, pulling from not just network television, not just paid television, not just streaming services. It's a good mix.
Yeah.
And you know, where the Oscars kind of failed to have the diversity and the choices of characters,
right?
The Emmys did not, and I think part of the reason for that is there's way more opportunity on TV
for diversity.
And I'm sorry, but TV is better than movies lately for the past few years. TV has been the better place for people to go.
Okay.
But yeah, so then let's see the series for comedy. You have Blackish, Master of None, Modern Family, Silicon Valley, Transparent, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and Veep. And then for drama series, you have, what's going on here? Do you have it on your...
Yeah. Okay. Drama series, you have The Americans, Better Call Saul, Downton Abbey, which probably you'll get it.
Yeah, because it's not on anymore.
Game of Thrones, Homeland, House of Cards, and Mr. Robot.
So, I want Mr. Robot to win.
Well, sure.
I would be over the moon if Game of Thrones won, but unfortunately, I think Downton Abbey's going to win.
Yeah.
So...
Good series, though.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, so we haven't finished it. We got to the point where... Matthew had his incident.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And then Christmas
special.
Yeah, and I guess she read ahead about some stuff, and there's some rapey stuff that happens, and she's like, I don't want to watch that, and to Anna or whoever it is. So we haven't revisited that one in a while, but I would hope to finish it out. But yeah, so there's the entire list. You can get to the link in the show notes. You know, it's a really strong year for TV. And I think, you know, other than Julie Louis-Dreyfus for Veep, and I can understand why she got it because she is an institution and she's one of the funniest women ever in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Like, I understand why she got the nod, but, you know, no real complaints. So
I've never thought she was that funny.
Oh, man, she was great on Seinfeld.
Yeah.
So, all right. And then our last little quick news bite, 20 minutes in, is Maddie Collector is shutting down. And a company called Super 7 will take over their Masters of the Universe line.
Which they've been around for a while.
Yeah, at the end of 2016. So,
and nobody knows what they're doing or anything yet. They haven't really announced it. They're teasing.
Yeah.
I'm sure by the end of this weekend, because it is, well, San Diego Comic Con this weekend, that we'll know something. But Super 7's the ones who started the reaction figures.
Yeah.
That Funko picked
Yeah,
up.
There's... Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a good thing to have on your resume.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, we'll see what happens from that. They have done some cool toys in the past.
Yeah.
You know, I got the Voltron from Maddie Collector. I got the Starro. I got the Superboy.
It's not the quality of the stuff. It was the management of the company altogether.
I think, you know, like one of the big things, sticking points that we had is you would go to like Big Lots and you would see the Maddie Collector toys there for significantly less than what you paid for.
There was a certain point where they were blowing out stuff for that were like exclusives because they didn't make any money off of them. Yeah, I had a subscription to the Masters of the Universe for a few years, and it just got to the point where it was like, cancel it, because they were doing all the like characters that weren't the main characters, and it's like, well, this makes no sense. I don't think like they even finished out anything, so. You know.
And you could find them. Like, they weren't hard to find, even the exclusives.
Yeah, you were starting to find, like, you go to cons and that, you would find all that stuff, like, real easily, and then you're paying the same price.
Yeah. I mean, I remember I went to Toronto, and one of the comic book stores I went in had all of them on a wall.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just one of each, they had, like, four of each. So.
But imagine the money they were spending on those subscriptions, because they were expensive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, you know.
So. Anyway, all right. So, I mean, there's not a whole lot Maddie we have to say about that. But, yeah, definitely RIP Maddie Collector.
Definitely RIP.
So, speaking of toy subscription services, did your Smuggler Bounty ship yet?
I don't know.
Mine shipped?
Yeah.
On the 11th.
Okay.
It's been 10 days and it's still not here. So. All right.
Just do like everybody else and cancel it.
I don't know. We'll see. I haven't
had your nerd rage yet.
I haven't had a nerd rage. I've liked everything I've gotten out of there.
Why?
Well, you told me what next month is, or the next one after the Jabba's Palace is the Death Star.
Yeah.
And I made the joke that they should do a Death Star cookie jar.
Yeah, that would be cool.
And you're like, that would be nerd rage. I'm like, that would be awesome. Like, you know, who
would
want? Well,
the Star-Lord mug was like, you know, the one that set people off.
Which the Star-Lord mug is like my go-to drinking tea mug.
You're welcome.
So, I know, and I appreciate it.
And it wasn't because I didn't like it. It's just I'm not that big a fan of coffee mugs and that type of stuff. So
yeah, and I drink a lot of tea. So anyway.
I kept the scarf.
Yeah, that scarf was pretty cool. So, all right. So moving on to Star Wars Celebration.
Europe.
Are they doing one in the States too?
Yeah, next year.
Oh, yeah.
Orlando.
Ooh, we might have to try and go to that. All right, so... Did you watch the trailer for season 3 of Star Wars Rebels?
I watched everything.
Yeah. Okay.
I didn't watch the Han Solo panel because I think that was on Sunday and I just didn't care that much about that.
So we talked about the clip with Ezra and Hondo and Sabine last week. The trailer, wow.
Yeah.
Like, and I feel like they learned their lesson from last season's trailer.
Yeah.
Because I think when we talked about last season's trailer, I think I had even said...
Well, there was two trailers. Remember, there was the trailer that was the San Diego one, I think. And then there was that mid-season trailer where it was like,
that
this is what's
one.
Going on in the rest of the year.
And so that the one that's going on for the rest of the year was the one where it's like, I don't even care if they continue the story. I'm good with this.
Yeah.
And then we didn't get most of that stuff into the last two episodes.
Yeah.
I feel like they really learned their lesson this time around.
Not teasing too much, but teasing enough.
Well, and teasing stuff that will be littered throughout the season.
Oh, yeah.
So, the big news is Thrawn.
Yeah.
I mean, he's officially back in canon.
A legend is now in canon.
So how do you feel about that?
I like that. I like that they're bringing him in. It's cool because each year is kind of a new villain, mm-hmm. but Thrawn isn't going to be thrown away like the Inquisitors were.
Right.
I mean, he's going to be around even after this.
Well, yeah.
And it's one of those things where I'm hoping that eventually it gets to the point where they bring in Prince Zizor from Shadows of the Empire. That would be kind of cool too.
I always thought it was Zizor.
I think I listened to the book on tape. And they called him Seashore.
All right, well then that's what it is. That was a great game for the Nintendo 64 as well.
See, I never played it. So, I read the book and have the soundtrack, and that's about.
But
some of the action figures.
Yeah, you know, seeing Kanan with the beard and the mask.
That was cool. The beard was thing really was cool. Like, okay.
I tell you what, Freddie Prinze is doing such a good job with that voice.
Yeah,
but this is the first time where you actually start to hear. You're starting to hear Freddie Prinze come out as Kanan's like because aging. He's getting older. Yeah, as Kanan's aging, right. And he's getting closer to Freddie Prinze's actual age.
Have the Kanan cooking show.
No, Kanan will be
all the knives will be lights, little miniature lightsabers.
Well, that and then Kanan will be writing story arcs. For whatever the wrestling is of that universe.
Oh, is he doing that too?
Not anymore.
Oh, okay.
He did that and he was helping the guys out with their acting and stuff like that in WWE.
Oh,
this
wow.
was like, I want to say like 3 or 4 years ago.
Interesting.
But yeah, it was pretty cool. He was of
all the actors that, have been around, for the last 15, 20 years, he's had a really strange career.
He does what he wants to do. Like, because he kind of had FU money from his dad and everything like that, which is, it's horrible what happened, but, to have that is great. It'll be pretty cool. Apparently, we're going to see Saw Gerrera show up.
Okay, the one that
Forest Whitaker's playing, who was in Clone Wars.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
Like, I'm kind of hoping to see some more of these characters
said that
introduced.
You're going to see a couple of the characters before the movie comes out because this is taking place still a couple years before Rogue One.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you'll see a couple of the characters.
But we're going to get more Mandalorians, which is never a bad thing.
Yeah, interesting.
Like actual Mandalorians, Mandalorians who are fighting for the Empire, which is weird. That'll be fun to see.
That'll probably explain what happened after the Emperor came and took Darth Maul off of Mandalore.
I hope so.
And that, and arc that storyline, and that maybe we'll find out what happened to Bo-Katan.
Yeah. Did you see the poster?
The poster for the
season.
I didn't see that.
It's awesome.
That's cool. Yeah.
So it's Maul looking over, basically looking over the shoulder of Thrawn and Ezra and Sabine with a bunch of stormtroopers and AT-ATs and AT-ATs, whatever, however you say it.
AT-ATs.
So, but
why all of a sudden are we correcting that now?
I have no idea.
Okay.
So, but I don't know. So, I love Rebels. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Movie Phone had a great just 5 things we learned about Rogue One from Celebration.
Oh, did they?
Which again links to all this is in the show notes.
Right.
But apparently the idea for Rogue One first popped up 13 years ago during the filming of Revenge of the Sith.
Okay.
So, which makes sense, I mean, they brought some of those actors, the actress who played Mon Monmouth in the deleted scenes back to play Mon Monmouth.
She's actually in Revenge of the Sith. You can see her.
She's
but
in
she
it, but she had
line.
She had a scene that
right,
was
yeah.
cut. The planet of Scarif. Scarf, however you say it.
Where the Death Star is being built?
Yeah. Was filmed in the Maldives?
The Maldives.
The Maldives, thank you. Sorry. And they actually used the Maldives military as stormtroopers during
totally
those scenes.
Totally makes sense.
Which is pretty freaking cool.
Because I'm sure especially the ones walking through the water, I mean, the military there would probably have a lot of
gear experience for that.
Dealing with that.
But a funny thing is most of them had never heard of Star Wars.
Okay.
So number three, Darth Vader will be present in quote unquote.
Oh, yeah. That's been.
In all his glory. And he will be utterly. It says here, and he will utter the word power at some point, which is expected to send chills down the audience's spine. Okay. I think this will be the first time we get to see a glimpse of the Vader that we saw fighting Ahsoka at the end of Rebels season 2.
Well, it's the idea that the continuity is all there. I mean, Lucasfilm and Marvel are all like all the continuity for all that now is we know when he finds out about Luke, we know about all that, you know, up until the point of after the Death Star, he didn't know about Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
And then he found out about Luke Skywalker and, you know,
He's not going to know about Luke or anything at this point.
He's more of a, you know, shrewd
one track mind.
He's after the Jedi pretty much.
Right. You know, another,
and plus whenever somebody fails the Emperor, you send in Vader to take care of him.
Yeah. Another interesting thing we learned is that while it was closed, the crew snuck into the Canary Wharf tube station in London to film a scene. And they wrapped.
That would be where all the stormtroopers were running and chasing.
Yep. And they wrapped apparently just before the train started running again.
Nice.
And finally, there's a planet called Jedha. J-E-D-H-A. Where a few of the characters are found, and it's pretty much a desert marketplace that's essentially a mecca. Well, and it's essentially a mecca for those who believe in the Force. So the IP man, the blind guy who's not a Jedi, but he believes in their ways.
Donnie Yen,
thank you.
Yeah.
And then did you see the poster for
Rogue One? Yeah, that I see.
That is amazing with the shadow of the Death Star.
Well, it makes sense because, Endor was the place where they were building the other Death Star.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, obviously the installation for this Death Star is on Scarif.
Yeah.
And it's like, it totally makes sense that, you know,
they were using a planet. The way it looks so big there, I'm thinking that would, affect the tides.
The
gravity and things like that on the planet, so... But,
well, and who knows, Warwick Davis was announced as a cast member.
He was in the
trailer, but they hadn't confirmed or said anything. So he's playing that little creature, and I'm like, maybe that's a creature from Scarif?
Maybe.
Yeah.
So I'll say this with the little behind-the-scenes thing that they showed.
Yeah.
Like, the Force Awakens one was awesome. Like, I got chills watching the Rogue One.
That was supposed to pull at your heart. And this one's just like amping you up. Like, this is what we're going to do. And they're like, when they're talking about X-Wings flying over, and I'm like,
Well, and I loved how he's like, you know, when I was a kid, I got to play with these things as figures. And now, like, here I am getting to do it in real life. Is it Gareth Edwards?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to
his take. The best part of that trailer is the guy that's getting into the X-Wing cockpit.
Yeah. Oh, and he just can't not smile.
Like, you know, he's like exactly. And I'm like, this is so cool.
And he looks just like Ned Flanders, which makes it even better. So.
One, did you catch that in the Rebels trailer that Biggs is going to show up?
No, Wedge.
Is it Wedge? Oh, Wedge. Yeah.
Wedge Antilles. Okay. So he leaves, he ditches the Empire and goes to the Rebels. So. And I'm sure we're going to start seeing more of those characters.
We'll see Han Solo eventually. I bet they do an arc to arc him into the movie.
Well, into the movie. Into Rogue One?
No, into Han Solo movie. I'm sure, you know, if that fits right, they'll do...
I think we'll probably see... We'll see a post-young Han Solo movie.
Next year's episode 8. Yeah. Is that right?
So next year is 8, and then the year after is Han Solo.
Okay.
And then 9, and then... Hopefully not Boba Fett. Anyway. All right. So, again, speaking of Boba Fett. So maybe that's who it is because he can't use that armor.
Yeah.
He can't fly to save his life.
Might be.
So, all right. And then Alden Ehrenreich. Ehrenreich. Thank you. Yeah. That's what it was. Was introduced to Han Solo, which was the worst kept Star Wars secret in the history of worst kept Star Wars secrets.
Well, I thought I seen pictures and I thought like it was cool that John Boyega was out there with them. And
yeah, they were having fun.
Yeah, they were. I seen one picture that Her Universe posted with Ashley Eckstein.
Yeah.
And
maybe we'll see Ahsoka in.
What's the actress's name that plays Rey?
Oh, Daisy Ridley.
Daisy Ridley, and she was in costume.
Yeah.
Like, she was probably walking around the convention floor and nobody even noticed her.
Yeah.
That reminds me of, like, the, what was it, Celebration 3 that I was at that was in Indianapolis.
Right.
Hayden Christensen was there.
Yeah.
Wearing a damn Stormtrooper helmet, walking around in just a Stormtrooper helmet and street clothes.
Well, you saw the, what was it, Simon Pegg from Comic-Con a couple years ago,
yeah,
with the white and red Boba Fett mask,
right,
with the Shaun of the Dead like shirt and tie and pants on, walking right around, you know. Yeah,
it's just, you know, it's funny because it's like Hayden kind of started that because it's like him and his brother were there,
yeah,
and his brother obviously nobody really knew, so he walked around with his brother and had a storm or I think it was a Stormtrooper helmet the whole time.
Mask. I did like how Bryan Cranston a couple years ago went as Walter White.
Cranston.
Well, he had the mask. It was
right,
great.
Yeah.
But no, so they've announced it. It'll be interesting. You know, it's Phil Lord and Christopher Miller from the Lego Movie fame.
Okay.
And 21 Jump Street and stuff like that. Yeah, so we'll see. Like, I'd like to see him flying some other ships and then find the Millennium Falcon at the end or win the Millennium Falcon at the end. Like, that would be a cool scene to see.
Who's playing young Lando Calrissian? Because you know.
Donald Faison.
I think so. No?
He's too old. He is too old.
What's his name?
I don't know. John Boyega.
No.
Because Lando's his dad.
I said him a few months ago. The one who wanted to play...
Donald Glover would be the perfect Lando character.
He's got the, I mean, he's got that kind of like
he's got the
sarcastic
swag.
Yeah, so.
But yeah,
that would be cool if they if Lando's in that movie. That would be cool if it was Donald Glover.
In the other thing that they have to show is they have to show him saving Chewbacca's life to get that life debt.
Yeah,
you know that those are just a couple of the things. Like the rest of it should be some kind of a heist movie, not like. Not like the stealing the Death Star plans heist movie, but like a Aladdin street rat kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So
like save the girl and all that type of thing. Cause you know, there's gotta be a girl since it's Han Solo.
Yep. And then, Rian Johnson talked about episode 8.
Yeah.
That's important. It was important not to let his awe of directing Star Wars get in the way of making a good one.
Okay.
Like I imagine
that makes
like,
sense.
Like in you know, I think JJ had the same thing with this, right? Like
see, I think with JJ though, it was because he directed Star Trek. He didn't have it as much because he already had done one of the like major focal points. Of
and
sci-fi.
He threw R2-D2 in there, so technically it's a Star Wars movie. So
you know,
but
everything.
Anyway. No, but it's interesting because like you do wonder, like these guys who are fans of this stuff, you know.
Especially,
like, how do you keep that in check and not go like too far overboard?
It was probably Harrison Ford walked on set,
yeah,
and you're like, I'm really doing this, ain't
yeah.
I? For
God
for
damn
Rianne,
it's
probably,
Han Solo.
Yeah, for Rianne, it's more
it's Luke. Yeah,
holy shit, Mark Hamill's like standing like 2 feet from me.
Oh my God, that's the one true Joker.
I'm telling him what to do. The one true Joker.
Anyway. But yeah, so no, in like I said, we have some show notes in stuff where he talked about this. An interesting fun fact is the production code name for episode 8 was Space Bear.
Okay.
So anyway, I'm really looking forward to the continuation of this story.
Because that was my name too.
Space Bear. but yeah, I don't know. I tried not to watch like too many of the panels.
Yeah.
Just because, well, like...
It was cool because they were airing panels live.
Well, and I was watching them on the Star Wars app
on
my iPhone.
Right.
So, but yeah. All right.
I mean, that's cool when a convention does that and, you know...
I think this is a very Disney influence on the Star Wars
Well, sure,
brand.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at, like, their D23 convention, it's like... And then you look at Celebration now, I mean... it's a combination of them and Reed Pop, because Reed Pop does that convention. They do C2E2. They do New York Comic Con. Yeah.
Hey, Lance.
And it's like, good job. You know, yeah, they do strong conventions. Not been to any of them, but from what everybody says, and you know, talking to Joe, because Joe is like my main source for stuff.
So Johnny's friend Joe Caroni, who did one of the four official prints.
I think so, yeah.
Of the show, who will be at the Citizen Comic Expo, who we're gonna try and talk to him at some point here. He was sharing his Facebook wall was one of my most fun things to follow this past weekend. Between the cosplay and the artwork and you know, the him with Sam Witwer, which that's my dream. My dream is to get Sam Witwer on here to talk to him. Okay. So because between, you know, being crashed down, being Aiden, and then Maul, and you know, Starkiller, and all that stuff.
He played somebody else too. Well, he played several of the Stormtrooper voices in Episode 7.
Yeah, so
along with other voice actors from Clone Wars and Rebels. So,
but all right, so
I think that's a cool thought.
It's so cool that they do that.
Yeah,
so, you know, in as cool as it was that they got Ewan McGregor to do the Obi-Wan line.
Yeah.
The Jesse Taylor, who was the voice of Obi-Wan on the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been kind of cool to leave his voice in there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because he recorded the line and then they redid it with Ewan. But Ewan is a gigantic movie star, so it's...
Well, it's one of those things where if you were going to, you know, if Obi-Wan's ghost was to show up, it would be Ewan McGregor at this point, and it would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't know. It'd be kind of cool to see them do the ghosts as the animated, like, characters from Clone Wars in that style.
I mean, they literally could probably do Al Guinness at this point and then just have Ewan McGregor do the voice.
Yeah, because they sound...
I mean, dude, by the end of Episode 3, he had it down.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, that is Al Guinness.
And the mannerisms and
everything. Yeah, yeah.
All right. You want to talk about Frank Cho versus Greg Rucka?
Sure.
All right. So right before we started recording last week, or right after, it came out that Frank Cho is walking off the Wonder Woman book after the sixth cover. Now, Liam Sharp is the artist on Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. He's doing the interiors and the main covers. Frank Cho was hired to do 24 variant covers.
Sure. Yeah.
For Wonder Woman.
Makes sense.
Because it is a bi-monthly book. Because
Frank Cho can draw women.
And honestly, like, other than Wonder Woman number one, I've got the Frank Cho variants.
Okay.
Because I like them. I really like... He draws Wonder Woman where she's feminine, yet she's muscular.
Yeah, it's and, the Amazon. It's what you expect
she's very much
Amazon
what she should
look
like.
Right.
That, like, the pictures that came out, like, over the last week or so of Gal Gadot. Like, she's looking more Amazonian. But according to Bleeding Cool, which is a really great website if you guys, you know, want to get news and things like that.
Right.
But according to Bleeding Cool, his departure comes as the result of frustration over perceived censorship of his covers, which he believes stems from the demands of the series writer Greg Rucka. And then this is a quote from Cho. All the problem lies with Greg Rucka. Greg Rucka has been trying to alter and censor my artwork since day one. Now, this is an interesting thing because these are variant covers.
Mm-hmm.
These aren't the main covers. And as I understand it, not being a comic book writer or artist, the writer does have some say on what's on the cover for the main cover. Now,
I think that's mainly DC and Marvel.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what, you know, what we have here. We're talking about, you know, one of the three DC books.
Why the writers would have any say in that? I would think the editors would be the ones that would, you know.
Well,
this goes back to, you know, our conversation about DC and the editorial not being in control of the books.
Right.
And it's like, this is this type of thing, when this comes out, is this thing that proves that the editorial at DC does not have complete control of their books.
It's not even their books. They're just line wide, they're not in
control. They don't have control of their writers and their artists.
But I don't know. So this is interesting. Like, you know,
I tell you what.
I like
Julius
Frank Cho.
If Schwartz was around and running DC now, none of this shit would be going on. None of it.
Frank Cho was, we were talking about Totally Awesome Hulk.
Yeah.
He did like the first he did the first arc.
Okay.
Of the interiors.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
With Greg Pak. You know, okay. It's a great book. It looks great. It's, you should all read it. But, you know, he was doing these covers. He's well known as a cover artist. He does, you know, in our...
And he wasn't doing anything that was, like, offensive.
No. Like, if you, when you go look at the show notes or, you know, our main image on this. And Johnny put together he does these outrage covers.
Yeah.
At cons. Where it's, but like, I just fake outrage. But I took
the cover outrage. That was edited down.
Right.
Where he drew underwear, which would make sense that Wonder Woman's not running around bare butt.
Let's hope not.
And it's like, that's what they edited off. Yeah. And I'm like, so you're saying she's naked underneath there then? I would find that more offensive than, oh, look, she's got underwear on. Hey, cool for Wonder Woman.
Yeah. She ran around in bikini bottoms for years.
Well, right.
Like, Linda...
I'm like, if Greg Rucka has this much of an issue with it, just put her back in the shorts.
Pants. Long pants.
Long pants. Put her in that agent costume that Terry Dodson and...
There you go.
Yeah.
Some joggers.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Put her in a skin-tight suit.
Put her in a skirt. Like a nice,
I'm sorry,
billowy,
but, you know,
skirt.
Cho's going off of the designs that were done by the main artist.
Right.
It's like he's not making up his own art. He's going off of what is shown to him.
And Liam Sharp has done, for having not drawn in a long time, he's done a great job.
Well, and, you know, I don't pick this book up at all, but I'm like, I'm a fan of Frank Cho's. I understand why he does the outrage covers. Yeah, because
it's fun.
Because there's a bunch of social justice warriors out there that are raising, you know, all kinds of fuss about something that's been around forever. And, I'm sorry, Wonder Woman has worn skimpy clothes since the first day she was published.
She was created by
an S&M.
An S&M guy who created the lie detector test.
Exactly.
But no, and you know, you have other writers who have, like, weighed in on this. And I'm not going to mention that writer's name. But that writer needs to just butt out because that writer wants to be relevant because they're not right now.
Didn't even know that Katie Lotz was.
Yeah. So
I seen that recently. I'm like, what?
Yeah. Anyway. All right. So
if you're writing DC books, you should be catching or keeping up with at least, you know, knowing what's going on in the universe on the TV shows and in the movies and that.
Yeah.
You should know. You don't have to watch them.
I agree.
But you should at least know who's playing who.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're absolutely 100% right.
Yeah.
But no, you know,
my Greg question Rucka, about this is because I had a thought about it.
Well, Greg Rucka declined any comment.
Well, right. Yeah. So. And that to me is like BS because it's like you should say something. It's he's doing this stuff because he wants controversy.
Mm-hmm.
Because if nobody came out and said anything about when he mentions in like the first or second issue that she might have had a same sex relationship on Amazon Island.
Sure.
And nobody said anything about it. So it's like you gotta do something else to cause controversy.
Right. And we all know I'm a Rucka fanboy.
Yeah, sure.
And you know, when you shared this with me, my first reply was, I'm curious as to what Greg Rucka has to say. Not because I don't believe Frank Cho, and not because, like, honestly, I fall on Frank Cho's side for this, but just because I'm curious as to why. Because Rucka is a feminist.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I myself am a feminist. I have a little girl, so there's no reason to be anything other than a feminist at this point. But, you know, to do that for something so, like, I mean, we're talking pixel-wise, we're talking maybe 15 pixels total of a line.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I don't know what he drew for the next three covers, but it's
who,
like,
knows? But
if you've seen the first three covers, you're like, this is classic Wonder Woman. They look
great.
If he was doing the book, I probably would be picking it up just because of the art.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Liberty Meadows. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was his book.
Yeah.
And it's like
his image book, right?
He made fun of everything that the social justice warriors all bitch at him about now. Mm-hmm. He made fun of it all in Liberty Meadows. And it's like, He knows that none of you get it.
Nope. And that's why he does the outrage covers.
Yeah.
All right. So whatever you guys think, let us know. Are you on Greg Rucka's side? Are you on
what I did with his outrage?
Do what?
Well, I hope when he sees what I did with his outrage on the banner.
It's pretty funny. All right. So let's get into Stranger Things.
Sure.
So Stranger Things is American science fiction supernatural horror television series created by the Duffer Brothers. It was written and directed by the pilot, and a good chunk of the series was
They wrote a a good amount of episodes.
And they directed a good amount, too. Yeah. Matt and Ross Duffer, with the executive produced by Sean Levy, who I know that name, but I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know offhand.
And
it's very familiar.
It's not like I'm sitting in front of a computer where I can't look it up or anything.
Yeah, you ever heard of Internet Movie Database?
Yeah. So as Jay and Miles call it, Dr. Internet to the rescue.
Yeah.
Oh, he did Cheaper by the Dozen, Pink Panther, Night at the Museum movies.
Okay.
Big Fat Liar. we talked about a Frankie Muniz movie earlier. That's right.
He directed all those?
Yep.
Okay.
So the interesting thing about this show is it's set in 1980s Indiana, where a young boy vanishes mysteriously, and then a telekinetic young girl shows up to help his friends try and find him.
Yeah.
It came out on July 15th, so about a week ago.
Last Friday, yeah.
And, and it's had glowing reviews for its characterization, its pacing, its atmosphere, the acting, and just the homage to 1980s Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you tore through this in a day.
Yeah.
I watched... It took me 3 tries to get through the first episode.
Okay.
One night I did start watching like way later than I should have and just kind of sacked out. The next day I just couldn't, I just wasn't paying any attention, so I turned it off.
Right.
Then I watched the first and second and most of the third episode in one sitting.
Okay.
And I remember texting, I didn't text you, I texted a different friend and said, hey, when does this get good?
You text me.
Did I text you that?
Yeah, you texted
me. So I texted someone else that too. But so here's the thing is I don't hate this series.
Okay.
And in a lot of ways, I don't even dislike it. But I am not utterly in love with this show.
You're not a horror fan either. Well, so.
You
and
know,
a lot
the,
of this is horror.
Here's the thing though. The supernatural aspect of this show.
Yeah.
Like the is right up my alley. The four kids.
Yeah.
You know, Mike and Toothless and Lucas and 11,
yeah. Right?
If they would have spent 95% of the episode on them looking for Will and 5% on the adult stuff and cut out the teenagers, I would be over the moon about this show. Those, and I'm putting Will in this category. Those five kids were the best thing about this show.
You think so?
I think... and especially 11, who
I thought the kids were really good.
She was played by a young lady named Miley Bobby Brown, which is the best name ever. She was fantastic. She did more with her eyes than, you know, most adult actors can do with their entire body.
Right.
She was great. Like, man, like she's like Chloe Moretz. When she was Hit Girl the first time around.
Yeah.
And we're all like, yeah, man, this is awesome. It reminded me of that. It reminded me of Drew Barrymore in Firestarter a lot.
Yeah.
I didn't see the correlation to the Goonies until probably episode 6.
Yeah.
And by then it felt like it was too late.
I didn't know there was supposed to be a
correlation. Yeah, people were like, well, because they're like, oh, it's like the Goonies. Like, so for
it,
me...
To me, it felt more like this was a bad version of E.T., like E.T. gone wrong.
Yeah.
And that, because
without
those kids
bikes.
reminded me of Elliot and his brother and his friends more than anything. And it was like, you know, the teenage tie to it was like kind of the E.T. thing too.
Right.
And then Winona Ryder as Will's mom, I was like, man, she's like, you haven't seen her around a lot lately.
Well, she took a break from Hollywood. Yeah. So.
But, I mean, she was really good. I thought she played that kind of mom really good.
So, and I understand the choices she made as that kind of mom because that's what a mom or parent would do. But there was a point where, you know, it was the, get out. And she got out of the house, right? And she got in her car and she started to drive away. And then she turned around and went right back in the house. And it's like, why?
Well, that was the whole thing.
That's what every white lady does in every horror movie.
Yeah, I think it was more for that. It was, you know, this is the answer to what's going on with my son.
Yeah.
He was the one telling her to get out.
And he was.
And it's like, you know, and she's like, hell no, I'm going to fight, you know.
So, in the thing going through, the trying to come through the wall, like, was it the Langoliers or, no, it was the Frighteners.
Yeah. Right?
Like, you know, like it had that. I'll say this.
That's been that
it's happened.
That trope's used a lot in horror movies.
The show looked great.
Yeah.
Just the look and feel of the show was great. It was the '80s. Everyone was smoking, you know?
Yeah.
The music was fantastic.
Yeah. That opening music's like pretty awesome.
That, and then just the music that they used and, you know, the popular culture music of the time.
Right.
Should I stay or should I go now is, you know, is the theme, like the unofficial theme song of this series. I what was saved the show for me was the last two episodes.
Okay.
I feel like, and I'm not spoiling anything, but I feel like the finale was so satisfying.
Yeah.
Because it very easily is the series finale.
Yeah.
And it's very easily to kind of open the door and come back in.
Yeah.
Or it opens the door for like another place.
Another story.
You know, another story that's still dealing with these. Now, Matthew Modine is in this movie or in this TV series.
Yeah.
I think in total he says maybe 100 words.
Yeah, he's playing the cigarette smoking man from X-Files type character.
I took him more as a hipster Colonel Sanders without the beard.
Okay.
Like, because his hair is white. Like, he just, like, yeah, I don't know.
I don't.
Like, I felt like he was wasted, especially because, like, if you look on the, like, the Netflix, like, list of characters, he's number two.
Well, I mean, but the stories with him and Eleven and why she's afraid of him, it kind of all, like,
and again, fits. That didn't come until, like, the end.
Know, that's
and,
not a,
right.
You know, but I mean, it was the whole thing of the mystery of his character. And that was kind of what you were like. It's kind of like,
see, the mystery of Eleven's character was more important than the mystery of his character.
Well, yeah, I mean,
and he was just a plot device.
Yeah,
for
he's a plot device, but he's kind of like Keys was in E.T.
Okay, yeah.
Keys was just at the beginning was just the Keys. You didn't even see the actor,
until
the last part of the movie, and then he's just there.
Yeah, no, you're right.
I mean, Peter Coyote is like a really good actor, but in that movie, he's, you know, got a few minutes of lines, and it's like, yeah, okay.
But then, like David Harbour, who was Hopper, sorry.
Yeah.
The sheriff.
Yeah, they kept, she kept calling him Hop.
Yeah.
Because she knew him. I mean, right, you know, everybody knew everybody. Yeah,
it was
a
small town. He played Elliot on The Newsroom. Right.
Yeah.
And he's been in a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
And I liked him so much better in other things.
Okay.
And all I like he
see of all the
like,
adults
as Elliot
in
Hirsch,
this, I liked
he kept,
him.
Like because Newsroom. So the Newsroom is you know just very near and dear to my heart.
Yeah.
Right. And so seeing Elliot Hirsch in that role, it kind of pulled me out.
Okay.
See
where
and
I was
that
more
wasn't
like
his,
I know him from something,
yeah.
but I avoided really looking
well,
up anybody.
Well, I didn't need IMDb for
yeah,
that one.
Well, I know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, a lot of shows I'll just go on IMDb if I'm like, who's that? You know?
Yeah.
And, but this, I'm like, I didn't even go on. I didn't even get online that much.
Okay. So, of the two kind of big supernaturally shows that we're watching right now, because neither one of us have started watching Outcast yet, between this and Preacher.
And I haven't watched all of Preacher yet.
And I haven't watched all of Preacher either. But what you've seen in Preacher and so in this.
Yeah.
Which is better.
I like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely
like
this.
For me, this felt like a combination of a lot. It was a lot of nods to the 80s. So there's like nods to, you know, E.T. There's nods to the Corey Haim movie Lucas.
Yeah. And
with
like
the teenagers.
Even, yeah.
And
even like Lost Boys a little bit.
A little bit of Lost Boys. But I mean, the thing was, with the preview, it looked like it was going to be an alien thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went in the direction of the alternate universes.
Right.
And I'm like, I like that better. That idea was better.
Yeah, if they would have gone with the alien thing, it would have been like Signs.
Yeah.
And really disappointing.
Yeah.
Now, like I said, the second half of the season definitely saved it for me. Like I said, my big issues are with the adult characters. I just never cared about them.
Yeah. The only one I liked Winona Ryder's performance, but Hop, I was like curious as to what happened.
Well, yeah,
because
with
his daughter
and
dying
stuff,
and it's like, and so, you know, he moved back to the town. Well, he had moved away.
At any point, did you think Eleven was his daughter?
No.
See, I was thinking that might have been, that's why she didn't want to go to the cops.
And that was the thing, is I think because of what happened with his daughter, it's like, it made him more of the story, too.
Sure.
Like, he felt like he was more there than Winona Ryder did. Winona Ryder was a plot device as well as Matthew Modine was. But I think that's why they were brought in. They're 80s actors.
They are.
That, you know, were, you know, used where they needed to be used. She was really good. Like, the when she goes to the store and buys all the Christmas lights and it's like, you know, come on, just give them to me. Because she works at the store, it's like, you know.
Well, the whole thing, too, where she's like, have I ever missed a day? It's like, oh, really?
Yeah.
But no.
Even all in all, I mean, the all setting, all, the cars, everything, it was like.
I enjoyed. I definitely enjoyed the second half.
Yeah.
I'm glad I watched all of it.
Sure.
The other one thing that really, from the beginning of the season, is the redheaded friend, right? Redheaded. The one who got eaten in the pool.
Oh, yeah, okay. All
right. So, in the horror movie trope of things, right?
Yeah.
The angry virgin never gets killed.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, there was that. If any of the, like, female teenage characters should have been killed, it should have been the shitty, snarky girl that was the friend of the two boys.
Yeah.
Who Nancy was, you know, getting in with.
Yeah.
She should have been the one who died. And then the snarky, angry virgin girl should have been like, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't be so snarky and angry, you know, and like been sunnier. But like, that's just
that was something I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
Yeah. For them to do that was not expected. But like, kill a character like that. That got dark.
I mean, like, it was definitely dark.
When the two teenage kids finally figure out, like, what's going on and get into that alternate universe and start seeing things, it gets dark real fast.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Yeah, I thought it was a fun series.
It's definitely worth watching.
Yeah.
I always rate things when I finish. I gave it a 3. Okay. A 3 out of 5.
Yeah.
You know.
I would have gave it a 4 out of 5.
Yeah. But
I mean, there were some things that were like, you know, okay, but most of it I was like,
yeah,
this is cool. It's like I really felt the vibe of a lot of the 80s stuff. Like, to
it was combine very nostalgic, it the way they
combined
and
it was really good.
Yeah, the look and feel was great. The music was great. The kids were great.
Yeah, that kid that played Toothless was he was so good.
If 11 wasn't so awesome, Toothless would have been.
He would have stole the show. Yeah,
and like the scenes that they had together were great. And then, like, I did like when she broke the kid's arm telekinetically.
Oh yeah,
and they're running off, and Toothless is like, yeah. That's what's going on.
Yeah, because he's like, we got a superhero.
He just had a knife to his throat. Where, but I tell you what, man, when he had that knife to his throat, he was like, "What? What are you gonna do?"
Yeah,
you know. And then Mike. I really liked Mike.
Yeah.
He was the DM and, you know, the dungeon master.
Right.
And,
like, yeah.
He was definitely the de facto leader of this little group of misfits. But. Man,
but it's one of those things where it was cool because it was the idea that, you know, the Dungeons and Dragons players actually had to fight a monster. Did.
So in that way, it reminded me of, and it's not an 80s thing, is the Knights of Badassdom.
Yeah.
You know, it was when the LARPers had to actually go fight.
Well, it's like I said, it's got a good combination of E.T., the Monster Squad's in there a little bit. The Goonies thing, I didn't really, like, pick up on any Goonies thing because Goonies is kind of, you know, a funny version of all that stuff from the 80s. And there wasn't nothing like, there was fun parts of this, but there was nothing like humor.
No, there was no humor to this.
Right. Well, the humor was like Toothless and the kids. The kids were a lot of
where 11 made the kid pee his pants.
Yeah. Like, yeah. There's like a lot of like, you know, ha ha moments, but it's not like ha ha comedy type moments. It's like, ha, look at that kid. Look what happened to him. So yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. So totally check it out. Yep. All right, so this is our 1-year anniversary, and just before we close out, I just want to say thanks to you.
No problem.
I want to say thank you to David
for
coming on and helping us out. I want to thank Freddie from Night of the Living Podcast.
For coming on.
You know, Aaron from Roma Collectibles, Jay Torres, Brandon Montclair, all, like, you know, Miguel and Susie, Jacques, you know, everyone we've talked to and who have helped us
Sarah, which
that one will air soon. But I just, like, everybody who helped us this year, like, thank you. It's been a blast. We're looking forward to doing many, many more of these.
Yeah.
And yeah. You have anything else?
Is your goal for the next anniversary to have Sam Witwer on?
Yes.
Okay.
That is my 2016-17 goal, is to get Sam Witwer on our show.
All right.
So, and you're gonna make it happen. because you're friends with Joe, and I just kind of know Joe. Anyway.
Yeah, we'll see.
But I did buy a bunch of artwork from Joe, so I think that should, you know. But anyway.
First, we got to have Joe on.
Well, yeah. know,
that's so. Only fair.
All right. Well, you guys know the drill. You know, if you're listening at this point, you obviously like the show. So hop over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play and drop us a 5-star review. That would be awesome. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, Infamous Podcast. For anything you need to find about us, it's infamouspodcast.com. I'm Brian Tudor on pretty much every social network.
Johnny Potter from pretty much the main networks.
Yeah, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Yeah. You know, definitely if you guys have any questions or you need to email us about something, it's contact@infamouspodcast.com. But yeah, this has been a great year. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you for being with us as I learned how to do all of this.
Yeah.
Thank you to
Johnny.
Through
the echoing episodes and the cutting off episodes.
Yeah,
and
so.
The
but,
continuity error episodes.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a few of those. But and thanks to you for stepping up and keeping this nonsense going.
No
I
problem.
Really, really appreciate
That's what
it.
I'm here for.
Yep.
Where's
all right,
my
guys.
Paycheck?
That's a conversation for offline.
And where's the clip show at?
Oh, God. I can't do that, man. I can't go back and listen that'll to my
be,
voice like
that.
That
would be so awesome just to throw a few clips together. But,
all right. Well, hey, guys. Whenever you're listening to this, have a great day, night, evening, weekend, morning. I find listening to podcasts where I work out is really helpful. And so maybe
really?
We can help you. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so thanks for a great year. We look forward to another one.
We'll be in your ear holes again.
I like that. Later. Yeah.